Guys, it is Super Bowl week, which could only mean one thing. Well, actually a few things, but it means this. It's time for the newest episode of the Southwest Virginia Sports Podcast. I am Brady Hess, happy to be back with you on this Thursday. It has been a long time since we talked about Graham State Championship season, but today, with the Super Bowl right around the corner on Sunday, we thought it would be the perfect time to come back to you with a new episode. Today, we had the opportunity to sit down with two-time Super Bowl champion, Richlands alum, West Virginia alum, and the two-time Super Bowl champion from New England's wins in Super Bowl 36 and 38, Mike Compton. He is the current UVA Wise offensive line coach. It's always a pleasure to talk with Mike, and we really appreciate him taking the time out of his day to sit down and talk with us. It's been a long time since we got here together, and we're going to get you up to speed really quick here before we get into today's wonderful episode with Mike. Basketball season, I know there's not been as much coverage as we've wanted to. I am the voice of Richlands High School basketball on Star 97.7 WRIC. So that in itself has been a big project for me. Hopefully here in the next few weeks, we can maybe get something kickstarted. But nonetheless, I apologize about that. A lot of great basketball being played out there this season, but it's not got the light shed on it that it deserves by us. So just wanted to issue an apology about that. Super Bowl, right around the corner, Sunday. Everybody's going to eat, drink, be merry, and watch the game with their family, their friends. Tickets are over $2,000 in the nosebleeds at the Mercedes-Benz Dome in Atlanta. Wish I could be there. It's going to be a special day for me. My dad, a big Rams fan, always has been. I'm a big Patriots fan, largely in part due to Mike Compton being from Richlands and Tom Brady and myself sharing the name Brady. That's why I'm a Patriots fan. It's really interesting getting that firsthand knowledge about Tom Brady and Bill Belichick driving the Cadillac of this Patriots dynasty over the last 19 years from someone who was there when it started. Also, it was a lot of fun for me just to interview Mike, one of my favorite players of all time, being from Richlands, having known his family over the years. It's just been a lot of fun. So, without further ado, I hope you all enjoy listening to this as much as I did doing it.
Folks, Super Bowl 53 kicks off in Atlanta on Sunday in the Mercedes-Benz Dome when the Los Angeles Rams take on the New England Patriots. This is the second time these two teams have met in the Super Bowl, the first time being in Super Bowl 36. Today's guest is no stranger to this matchup. Mike Compton was a part of the group that started the New England Patriots dynasty. The West Virginia University standout won two Super Bowl championships after New England was victorious in Super Bowl 36 and Super Bowl 38. He is now the offensive line coach at UVA Wise, and it is an honor to be joined by Mike today on the Southwest Virginia Sports Podcast. Mike, thanks so much for joining me today, my man.
Thank you for having me.
Mike, before we get into that professional career, I just want to make two quick pit stops at Richlands High School and then at West Virginia. At Richlands, we were kind of talking before, you played under Bruce Evans and under Billy Hahn. What were those days like playing for the Blue Tornado?
Oh, they were great. They were some of my best days. You know, you can, you know, play on Saturdays, Monday night football and all that, but nothing beats Friday night under the lights. Especially, you know, Friday nights under the lights at Ernie Hicks Stadium. You know, obviously, football worked out well for me. You know, it wasn't my first true love as a freshman. I contemplated walking away, quitting a bunch of times as a freshman, but stuck it out and slowly started to develop physically and grow and receive college recruiting letters. And at some point, the thought occurred that I could use football as a vehicle to get my education and be the first of my family to graduate.
And you know, you do that. You take your talents to Morgantown to play for Don Nealon and the Mountaineers. You go down as arguably the greatest center to ever play at West Virginia. You're a member of the Hall of Fame there. The list of accolades are endless. You were an All-American. Just how would you describe that time at West Virginia?
It was a good time. I don't look back and regret making that decision. I mean, I had a lot of offers coming out of high school, and you know, I feel like I chose the best one. They wanted to recruit me and to play center, and that's really what I wanted to play in college. You know, college was a kind of a up and down experience for me, since I ended up being married and having my oldest daughter was born my second year there. So I didn't have the typical, you know, college student life that most college students have. So I had to grow up real quick, and you know, think about other people besides myself and what I wanted and to provide for later on. And I think that really focused me on, more so than football, really my academics.
You move on from West Virginia there and you go to the next chapter of your life. The kid from McGuire Valley gets selected by the Detroit Lions in the third round of the 93 draft. Just what was that day like for you?
It was a long day. It was a very long day. It was a lot slower, the draft process in 93, because it was the first year that they cut the draft from 12 rounds to 7 rounds. So there's a lot less rounds, and that means a lot less players getting drafted. You know, I never thought I was good enough or confident enough to, you know, self-confidence. I was a very humble person when it came to my ability, and I think that's part of my upbringing, to always be humble. But the first round usually took all day Sunday. It took 6 hours, and you were lucky if you got to the second round. You know, I did like most players did. I stayed glued to the TV. You know, there was some chances that I could be a first-round pick. It didn't happen that way. And, you know, my family and families left, and I was actually alone at the I lived in a trailer in Morgantown my senior year, and I was actually washing dishes when Detroit called and told me they were going to pick me with the 68th pick in the third round. So I immediately tried to get up with my mom, and at the time my wife, who was with my daughter and her family, and let them know that I had been selected. And when it was over with, it was a total relief. You know, that's a stressful time. It's a lot like recruiting.
It absolutely is. So you get to Detroit, and from 96 to 2000, you start in every game there with the Lions. What were those years like in Detroit, and especially to block for a back like Barry Sanders during his record-breaking seasons, especially during that 2,000-yard season in 1997?
Well, my year starting out there was kind of like being a freshman in high school. I was being paid to play football, and during my rookie year and training camp, I sat many a night on the edge of the bed wondering if this was something I truly wanted to do. And I know a lot of people, you know, say, well, you're getting paid money to do that. It's you're starting over. You're a freshman in high school again, a rookie in the NFL. But I stuck to my game plan that helped me through Richlands and got me through West Virginia, and that was just work hard, always do the right thing, be where you're supposed to be when you're supposed to be there, stay out of trouble. I worked my way into the lineup most of the time in 95 due to injury, and then I took over the full-time job in 96 through 2000, and actually from 96 to 2000, I only missed two games against Seattle because it was both times we played them, I was injured. I didn't let injury keep me out, and in 97 we had the 2053 year and with Barry, and he in my opinion is the best running back that has ever played the game. He's a great person, and if I didn't want my kids to look at me as a role model, he would be the next guy I would want them to look up to.
So after those years in Detroit, some great years as you just mentioned, in 2001 you signed with the New England Patriots. What made Foxborough the right place for you?
Basically Matt Millen. He came into the Detroit Lions and was trying to do a complete overhaul, and that didn't really turn out well for them in those years. Both myself and Jeff Hardings, we were two of the five starters from the 2000 year. They both let go to free agency and didn't try to keep either one of us, and he ended up in Pittsburgh and I ended up in New England. And, you know, for me, going to New England was a chance to get a fresh start, and, you know, I like their line coach there, Dante Scarnecchia. Matter of fact, he's still coaching offensive line there. And felt good with the players, felt good with the system, and obviously felt good with the direct and, you know, if I can use the word brutal honesty of Coach Belichick.
Let's talk about that 0-1 season a little bit. You guys start that year 0-2. However, the storybook kind of starts in the case of Tom Brady in that second game against the Jets. Drew Bledsoe gets knocked out of the game, and in comes a kid from Michigan named Tom Brady. What do you remember about that moment when Bledsoe got knocked out and Tom comes in?
Well, the thing I certainly remember is the sound and the volume of the hit when Mo Lewis hit Drew. Mo Lewis is no small individual, and you know he's 6'4", 6'3", 265, and runs about a 4.6 40, and he popped him real good. We didn't know that he had punctured a lung until later in the game when he disappeared from the sideline. But just remember Tom Brady coming into the huddle, and you know I ended up always calling him Johnny Mox from the movie Varsity Blues, because he was you know, he was a nobody, and he just come in and he just started slinging it around, you know, throwing the ball. He was always prepared. You know, you could tell by the way he prepared and worked and practiced and then studied in the film room and stuff that he was going to be pretty special. And he played with a little chip on his shoulder. I think it's something all professional athletes need to have for motivation. And, you know, we got on a roll and got hot that year, and things worked out for the best.
They absolutely did work out for the best. You talk about getting on the roll. I read an interview that you did with Tim Hayes once, and you said that the turning point for you guys was when you fell to the Rams by a touchdown on November 18th. After that, you guys didn't lose again. But sitting at 5-5, what clicked that day for you guys to kind of say, hey, we're not going to lose again?
Well, it just they were pumping up the Rams so much as the greatest show on turf, and we played them, and my memory's not as good as it used to be. I think it was 24-17, and we came off the field. You know, we felt bad because we had opportunities to win the game. Ball security, fumbling it down toward the end zone, I believe, cost us. But we also had a sense of motivation that, hey, if they're the best team in the National Football League, then we have a shot at being a great team too. And if we get another shot at them, we all felt in consensus that if we got another shot, we could beat them.
And what ensued after that, as football fans everywhere know, is the 9-game winning streak, a world championship. But before we get to Super Bowl 36, I want to talk about that snowball and the game that's now infamously known as the Tuck Rule game. What was that day like for you?
You know, it was a fun game. I mean, a lot of people look at it. It wasn't a very cold game until about the end of the fourth quarter when the temperature started dropping. You know, it was big snowflakes, a lot of snow in a short period of time, but yet it was still kind of warm. You know, it was one of those that will go down in history. And luckily, because of a rule way back in the rule book somewhere that Coach Belichick knew about, and a lot of people didn't, it gave us a chance to win the game. But more importantly, a lot of people don't know the winning field goal kick in the overtime was not the biggest kick. The kick earlier in the fourth quarter, I think, or third quarter, of like 30 or some yards in the snow and all that he made to tie it or to go ahead, I think it was to tie, to me was a bigger kick than the one to win it. You know, I was on the field goal team, right guard, saw the ball go through, and, you know, I just put my hands up in there and couldn't believe I was going to the AFC Championship.
That AFC title game, you guys knock off Pittsburgh. After 8 years in Detroit, you make it your first year in New England all the way to the Super Bowl in New Orleans. What was that entire Super Bowl week experience like for you from the time you arrived to Louisiana leading up into the game, and then when you meet the Rams again in the Superdome, and it's a Vinatieri field goal again that knocks you guys through to the World Championship? You were on the field for that as well, started at left guard, and I was watching some highlights of it last night. Fox puts a camera on you as soon as the kick went through, I believe it was, and just very happy, you can tell there. But what was that feeling like leading up to that game, and then what was it like to stand in the Superdome as a world champion?
You know, playing for the Super Bowl, that was, I mean, there wasn't that week off or week between that a team has to prepare. We actually got on a plane, left Pittsburgh, got home, got on a plane the next morning and headed to New Orleans, you know, trying to get flights and tickets for family and all that stuff that you use now during the open week. We didn't have, so it was a little bit of a hustle and bustle, but, you know, Wednesday we just got back into a normal routine. We started our regular practice because you got the Super Bowl media thing on Tuesday and all that. But once we got into our regular practice week mode, it just became another game. The biggest thing about the Super Bowl is learning how to go out for warm-ups, come back in, and wait, you know, 35 to 45 minutes longer than a normal start of a game. We practiced that all week. We would stop practice after stretching and for 30 minutes and then start practice back up just to get us our bodies and our body clock's used to that. It was a good game. I think the officials still got us on a bad call against Willie McGinnis when he grabbed Marshall Faulk out of the backfield. That would have been another touchdown. You know, we kept battling, and then it went into overtime, and, you know, we weren't going to just snap it and take a knee and let the greatest show on turf have a chance to win the coin toss and beat us, because then first person that scored, no matter what, field goal or touchdown, won the game. So we went in there and we basically felt good of ourselves. Our quarterback, you know, we just, hey, we're going to protect, and he's going to sling it, and we're going to try to get down here, and we've got a great kicker, get him in range and see what happens. I was a guard on the field goal because the guy that was playing earlier, Joe Andrews, had locked his back up. So I subbed in for him, and, you know, right before the snap, I told Grant Williams, who played left tackle in that game because our starting left tackle got injured early, that I was going to go low on the guys. I was not going to be known as the guy that got the winning Super Bowl kick block. So they kind of fall on me and block my view, and the only way I knew the ball was good is there was a guy in the back of the end zone between the goalposts in a Ted Johnson blue Patriot football jersey, and I saw him jumping up and down with his arms. I knew that it went through, and I just took off running for about 5 yards, took my helmet off, and just collapsed on the ground and laid there for a little bit, and then I got up because they must have shown me because they thought I was the snow angel guy, but I wasn't. But it was great. It was unbelievable that, you know, I've always been like this, and it probably is a flaw of my character. That, you know, here's Mike Compton from McGuire Valley, grew up in a double wide trailer. Dad was a coal miner, mom was a nurse, and he's in a club now on top of the world at the highest level of his chosen field of a job, is in a select group of about 1,500 to 1,800 people. And it was a special day, and, you know, every now and then it's very surreal. And then when you get your rings, you finally realize that. But, you know, luckily Coach Belichick brought us back down to earth at the start of the next year training camp.
Yeah, and you talk about the next year of training camp. In 2002, you start every game that season. But in 2003, you guys make it to the Super Bowl. You defeat the Panthers in Super Bowl 38. You start two contests before being sidelined due to an injury that year. Just what was so special about that 2003 team, and how did it differ from the teams 2 years ahead of their time?
I don't think it differed a lot. You know, I think somewhere after that Rams game, and probably is still continuing to today, 53 guys on that roster bought into what the head coach was selling. When you do that, when a team is completely 100% bought into the coaching staff and the head coach and what he's trying to do, that becomes a dangerous team. And usually the team that gets on a roll in late November, early December, and throughout the month of December is a dangerous team every year. The lineups changed a little bit. I know I suffered an injury after week two, and then we lost Damian Woody. It kind of just feels the Coach Belichick Patriot motto of next man up, do your job, because you're the old cliche, you're one play away from never playing again, and you don't know when that, you know, I tell my lineman now, you may be a backup at the start of the game, but one play into the game, you might be the starter, because there's a lot of stuff that goes on between the tackles and obviously in a collision sport like football. But a lot of the same principles that we did in 2001 were there. I mean, it's the Patriot way. That's all I know how to express it. It's Coach Belichick's way, and, you know, he's had some rollover in his staff, but he's kept a good majority of them there. And, you know, like Ivan Pierce, the running back coach, you know, Josh McDaniel, you know, Dante Scarnecchia, people like that. And that's their standard. They've set the standard.
They have indeed set the standard. And you wrap up your career in Jacksonville there the next season. But I want to keep it in Foxborough here. You talk about the standard that's set there. If I did my math correctly, you started all 40 games you appeared in for the Patriots. 19 years later, here we are. Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, Bob Kraft, and the New England Patriots are still on top in the football world. They've been to 9 Super Bowls now. You were there when it all started. In 2001, when you guys made that first run, did you ever think that it would flourish into something like this?
No, because you don't look that far ahead. I can't believe it's not been 19 years. But, I mean, sometimes it feels like you just quit playing and got out of the league. No, because, you know, a professional player in the NFL, you can be here today and gone tomorrow. It's a big time business, and sometimes you can't mix business with making it personal. You know, it's kind of like trading racehorses, you know, when you're always constantly trying to improve your stable. But most athletes don't look that far ahead or think. They're focused on the right now and what's in front of them. But because, you know, guys don't worry about, oh, I'm going to be in the Hall of Fame one day and all that, because we all have a job to do, and you're paid to do a job. And if you focus on something outside of that job and or down the road, then you can lose a step and you can be gone the next day. But as I've been out of football and away from it, you know, I see that the standard they've set, and it started in, actually it started, I think, in Cleveland when he was a head coach at Cleveland. He tried to do the similar things, and they kind of run him out of town and moved. But his way is set the bar high, and, you know, nobody would ever say that Tom Brady would have been playing these many years. You know, a late-round pick and slow and can't throw the ball very long because he's got a weak arm. But sometimes, like in recruiting college, sometimes the measurables on paper don't mean as much as what's inside with your heart and your brain.
That's absolutely right. Just a few more here, and I'm going to get you out of here. Just, you know, we talk about Brady and how when you first saw him, you referred to him as Mox, and now he's arguably the greatest quarterback of all time. I think he's the greatest quarterback of all time. And then you have Belichick, who's arguably the greatest NFL football coach of all time. Just what has set those two apart over the years, and what do you think this longevity can be attributed to?
Well, one, I think, obviously, winning. That's the main thing. If they weren't winning, neither one of them might not be there. So winning, but that being said, I think they have had and do have a relationship that has withstood the test of time. Do they get along? Probably not. I'm sure it's like a marriage. You know, sometimes you argue and stuff with your wife, but at the end of the day, you're in it together. And preparation. Coach Belichick, I know Tom, usually Tuesdays are an off day during the regular season for the players per the union. Well, if you're looking at the top quarterbacks, they're usually in the facility on their off day working with the offensive coordinator, talking to the head coach, watching film, because that position, they have to know what's going on with the other 10 positions. They have to know just a tremendous, massive of knowledge to be able to operate at a high level. Two, I think taking care of his body. You know, the days of, you know, Lynn Dawson sitting in the locker room at halftime and smoking a cigarette have went the way of the white buffalo. I think now the athletes are more in tune to how to take care of their body, how to play longer. You know, the NFL player has evolved. They're bigger, they're stronger, they're faster than even 19 years ago. I think that's helped them. And also with Coach Belichick, I think he makes practices as tough as he can so the games are easy. If a team shows you one defense the week before, you will have seen it at least 10 or more times in practice. So the practices were really tougher than the games. And usually, you know, you won games and you lost. But very rarely when I was there were we caught off guard by anything that we hadn't seen. And I'm not into the Phil Jackson Zen stuff, but if there was a Phil Jackson in football with that stuff, that philosophy, that would probably be Coach Belichick, because he uses a lot of outside things, from boxing matches to horse races to basketball personal fouls, to relay his message and communicate with his players. There's going to be points in the game that are key moments, and if you do this and you make the wrong decision, then this could affect the whole outcome of the game. And it's not the beginning of the race, it's the finish. It's who finishes across the line. That's the ultimate prize.
Just a couple more here, and I'm going to get you out of here. I saw a couple years back they honored that Super Bowl 36 team in Foxborough. You were there. How often do you talk to those old guys that you played with there in Foxborough?
Not too much. I mean, we've all sort of gone their separate ways. I probably would like to talk to them more, you know, than I do. But some most of us have gone on and got on with our lives and are in careers. You know, being a college coach keeps me busy during football season. So I was lucky enough to go up there, and actually, there was just about the whole team showed up for it, which is very unusual. And it was great to see those guys. Some guys looked the way they did 19 years ago, and some guys have let themselves go. And, you know, you try to keep up with them. You know, I stay in touch with some of the trainers, and obviously Dante Scarnecchia, their offensive line coach. But, you know, guys move on, and you know, they live different places. Even when they played in Foxborough, they would have off-season homes and families, and so you kind of get loose track a little bit, but you know, you try to stay up. With social media nowadays, it's a whole lot easier with Facebook and Twitter and stuff like that.
Now, looking to Sunday, how do you see this game on Sunday playing out down in Atlanta?
Well, I think it's going to be an excellent game. I would be shocked if it was a one-sided for either team. I think last week both conference games were some of the best that the NFL's had in years. You know, I think that whatever New England is going to find or try to find what LA does the best and take that away from them and make them do their second best thing in order to win the game. And what I mean by that is when we played Pittsburgh in the AFC Championship in 2001, we defensively said we're not letting Jerome Bettis beat us to go to the Super Bowl. If we're going to get beat, he's not going to be able to run the ball. Their quarterback, Cordell Stewart, is going to have to throw it to beat us. And he wasn't a very good thrower, and that's the game plan. Now, on the other hand, you know, L.A. runs the ball very well with their two running backs, and they throw the ball pretty good. So that on that, it's going to come down to matchups. You know, I think the offensive line is going to be tested with different looks and stuff by Wade Phillips. I think how Tom Brady and his matchups on LA's corners will be a big factor. And also Rob Gronkowski. I thought he played an excellent game, not only as a tight end catching big catches, but he was blocking some guys that helped them get big runs. For LA, I think the main thing is they're going to have to try to get pressure to Brady. They can't let him sit back there or play soft zone. I think if he has time, he'll pick them apart. But also, they have got to get New England in more of a three and out and off the field. They can't let them, you know, like the Chiefs, go down on the first play and on 8 minutes, an 8 minute drive, and allow 7 points. They've got to try to generate some pressure to get to Tom and get them off the field and score points offensively. And it'll usually take, you know, after about halfway through the first quarter, both sides will know what the other one's trying to do, what their game plan is, and then they'll make their adjustments, and then that's when the true chess match and stuff will kick in.
I'm definitely looking forward to that matchup in Atlanta. This is the last one I got for you. As a kid who grew up in McGuire Valley, to have played under the greatest football coach, the greatest quarterback, and with the greatest running back to ever play the game, in addition to winning 2 Super Bowl championships, being a Hall of Famer at West Virginia, how does that make you feel? In hindsight, if you were to stand face-to-face with 10-year-old Mike Compton, what do you think he would think about all that?
He would probably, the 10-year-old Mike Compton would probably be like the 48-year-old Mike Compton. He doesn't sit around and brag about it. It's not who he is. Football was just a part of my life. It wasn't who defines me. And I would tell him, you know, what defines you will be the type of person you are, the type of father and husband you are, and the legacy you leave when you leave this world as a human being and a father and a husband and a member of your community. The 10-year-old Mike Compton would shy away from telling people. I mean, I don't even wear my rings. I don't play the 2-time Super Bowl card. That's just not me, because that wasn't how I was raised. You know, I'm a very quiet person. And sometimes people get that construed as being standoffish or snoopy or whatever, but the Mike Compton now would tell the 10-year-old, you know, same thing he tells his kids every day. You're no better, you're no worse than any person else on this planet. You treat everybody accordingly. Hard work takes care of everything. Nothing will come free to you. You're going to have to bust your butt every day, no matter if you're going to be a football player or you're going to be a public school teacher. You've got to work to be the best, because someone that doesn't have your job is looking at your job and thinking your job's pretty good. So enjoy the ride, have fun, but always keep your feet on the ground or your mother will jerk you back to earth.
I know how that goes big time, my man. Mike, it's been an honor, my man. I've always admired you and what you've done, especially out of our hometown of Richlands. I really appreciate you hopping on here with me today, and I hope we can do it again soon, my man.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you very much for those kind words, and everybody tune in, and hopefully we'll see him get 6 rings. That'll be special.
Yes, it will, and I'll be rooting for the Patriots as well. That is current UVA Wise offensive line coach and 2-time Super Bowl champion Mike Compton right here on the Southwest Virginia Sports Podcast. So there you have it. Right before Super Bowl 53 kicks off down in Atlanta, Georgia, between the LA Rams and the New England Patriots, we have former Patriot and Super Bowl champion Mike Compton telling us his experiences in the Super Bowl, his experiences playing with Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, and how the New England dynasty got started back in the early 2000s. Really appreciate Mike for his time. Really appreciate Daryl Ely from the UVA Wise SID department getting this arranged for us here on the Southwest Virginia Sports Podcast. I really appreciate it for making this happen and come into fruition. Super Bowl Sunday, a big day here for us at the Hess House. Dad's been a Rams fan forever. I've been a Patriots fan forever, so this will be a lot of fun. Going back to Mike for a minute, just hearing his stories about playing for Richlands in West Virginia and then in Detroit, New England, Jacksonville, and then he becomes a coach here in the region now before planning down at UVA Wise. It's just really interesting to hear those types of people tell their stories after being football lifers. You know, he mentioned before the interview got started that he thought he might want to switch from football to baseball when he was a youngster. He didn't know if football was for him, but look at the life that it's given him. It's given him a great life. Legend here in the coal fields, legend in the state of West Virginia, Super Bowl champion in Boston, blocked for Barry Sanders, 2,000 plus yards in Detroit. So Mike Compton has a pretty reputable name. We've been talking about how we've wanted to do more with the famous sons of Southwest Virginia. We had Thomas Jones last year. Now we've got Mike today. This was a lot of fun. Hopefully we can keep this going. Maybe with baseball coming up, we can get Billy Wagner and Jimmy Gobble and those guys on here. I know those would be very enlightening and wonderful opportunities. But this one today, I hope it was a home run. I had a lot of fun doing this one, and I look forward to sitting down and talking with Mike again. It's always been one of my goals to get to interview Mike, him being from my hometown and the career he's had. So just to get to cross that one off the bucket list, that one was a lot of fun. Ryan will be back for the next episode. I believe this one was kind of a fly by the seat of your pants. I put this together within the last 48 hours. So hopefully he will be rooting for a Patriots win on Sunday. We know that he is the biggest Patriots fan around. But big game on Sunday. Hope everyone enjoys that contest. Hope everyone had a Merry Christmas. Hope everybody had a Happy New Year. Coalfield Sports Player of the Year announcement coming soon. This podcast can be found on Coalfield Sports and anywhere that podcast can be made listenable. If that's not a word, I just made it a word. But we'll be back with some more content soon. Check out coalfieldsports.com. We put out an all Coalfield Sports first and second football teams out, as well as an honorable mention. So I think that that one was a really good thing to do. Player of the Year, as I mentioned, coming up. Very deserving candidate. And we're going to get that out to the masses very soon. Follow us on Twitter at Southwest Virginia Sports Pod. I think that is SWVA Sports Pod. On Coalfield Sports, at Coalfield Sports is the Twitter handle. At JBHess66 is my Twitter handle. And then, of course, coalfieldsports.com. And as I mentioned, about where you can find the podcast. Another big thank you to Mike Compton. This one was a thrill. I really enjoyed this one. Looking forward to Sunday. Hopefully the Pats can win another one. 6 would be pretty impressive for Tom. But for everyone involved, again, a big thanks to Mike Compton. I'm Brady Hess. We'll see you next time on the Southwest Virginia Sports Podcast. See ya! Cause she was born a thief, she stole we'll be right back.
tried to leave his mark. Mama said, boy, run fast, run as fast as you can. 'Cause she was born a thief, now she's making me a wanted man.